order. It is 1:35. With us today is Senator Ellis, Senator Thiekin, Senator Stevens, myself, Bundy. On today's schedule, we have confirmation hearings for folks with the State Board of Public Accountancy, and we have a couple of bills, HB 15, HB 90, and SB 130. If we have time, we will also do medical license and fisheries. So, yeah, let us start with the confirmation hearings. We do have Mr. Mertz here in Juneau, if you'd like to join us, sir.
Sure.
You'd state your name for the record, please.
My name is Max Mertz.
And you are have been nominated for a position on the State Board of Public Accountancy. Do you would you like to make an opening statement?
I haven't really prepared anything. I'm just by way of introduction. I'm Max Mertz. I'm a partner with LG Rayfeld Mertz in Juneau. I've been in public accounting for 16 years now, and we have about a 20-person firm here in town, and interested in serving on the board. So,
all right, thank you. Well, we appreciate members of the public that will share their expertise in areas of public service. The somewhat tongue-in-cheek question that people always get is, why would you subject yourself to this?
That's a really good question. I'm replacing Linda Thomas, who is the controller of the Alaska Brewing Company. Linda had been on for two terms and is a friend of mine, and she was looking for a replacement for a Southeast chair, and so it seemed, frankly, to be a good time to be on the board. There's some, as you know, large issues the accounting profession is facing, and those center around enforcement, frankly, of the profession and of CPAs and their conduct. And it seemed kind of a good way to serve the profession. Now it's I think it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of years. And while I don't have any agenda, I am interested in seeing that the profession has strong enforcement. I think the other area that I'm interested in, I know there's other members of the board that are interested as well, is this whole notion of the relationship with the state of Alaska. I think that I know there's some interest in examining at least whether the Board of Accountancy should be independent from the state of Alaska, should function on its own, whether that makes sense or not. And so one of the things that I imagine we'll be addressing over the next couple of years is that question, and talking with the state society and examining whether that makes sense or not. So those are probably the reasons why I decided to be on the board.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mr. Mertz? I hate to have you come all the way in and let you off that easy.
That's all right.
He doesn't sign everything.
It's that time of year, so.
Senator Ellis has a question.
We Googled Mr. Mertz, and everything that came up was very positive.
Oh, well, that's good.
Willingness to serve.
You bet.
Googled and you passed the test.
Yeah, well, that's good to know.
And just for myself, again, thank you for being willing to serve and encourage you in your quest to have the board be self-policing of its members.
Absolutely.
I think we're the public's best served when those on the inside hold their members to a high level of.
That's exactly right.
Accountability, does that be a pun with your job?
But yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Well, if there are no further questions for Mr. Mertz, what we'll do is we pass your name on to the committee of a whole,
right.
And the folks here at this point, they're passing the name on doesn't signify an endorsement or disapproval. We go on to the main body as for approval.
Great, thank you.
So thank you again for coming in. We appreciate
bye-bye.
It. And excuse me. Also with us today on teleconference is Kathleen Wilson. Ms. Wilson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I called you Kathleen. I guess it's Catherine, isn't it?
Right, Catherine.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. Would you care to make an opening statement?
I have been in I've been retired for almost 7 years, but prior to that, I was the business manager for the school district here, the Alaska Gateway School District. And then prior to that, I worked with the Alaska National Bank of the North in the local branch when they had the branch here, part-time and full-time, doing just about every job in the branch. I've been retired, like I say, for almost 7 years. I've been the last couple of years looking for something to do, and when I was asked to be on the board, I thought this was a perfect answer to what I wanted to do.
All right, thank you very much. Much like I asked Mr. Mertz, how do you view your role on the board and, knowing that taking on a role like this, which we appreciate, does sometimes put you in conflict for other members of the profession, and if you are aware of or see major issues that the board ought to be dealing with?
I'm not a CPA. I'm a public member, so I don't view it as any sort of a conflict with the CPAs. But I've only been to one meeting. I'm not really familiar with a lot that the board has been doing or what they can do. I know that I've been surprised by the amount of paperwork and all that they do and can do, but I think that I will truly enjoy it.
Questions? I see none, so we thank you again for your willingness to serve, and we will pass your name forward for hearing by the entire legislature.
Thank you.
Thank you again. That then brings us to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, non-controversial group, and Mr. Tony Price. Are you with us, Mr. Price?
I am, Chairman.
Thank you. Would you care to make an opening statement?
I'd just like to thank you for taking the time. I know it's necessary time because I'd like to express my joy at potentially joining such a non-controversial commission. My background is in public accounting, finance, and management. Most recently, I was with the municipality of Anchorage and set up their public finance and investment division. Spent 3.5 years there, and prior to that, I won't go through every detail, but I spent 10 years at Alaska Housing as their cash manager, working in their finance department, issuing, managing the debt, as well as the investments and short-term debt, commercial paper, Euro commercial paper, reverse repo program. I earned my CPA in 1980 in Seattle, came up here in 1983, and have been here since. Are there anything I could specifically answer for you, Chairman?
This is Senator Bundy again. Just interested in your perspective of the role of the board and what you might specifically bring to it, and if you, as a new person to the board, are aware of outstanding major issues that should be addressed?
Well, I think there are outstanding major issues in the form of the dockets, but those really aren't anything we can talk about. We're precluded from talking about them in open forum. But what I bring, I think I bring my financial and business experience and my concern for the betterment of the state. I know that the APUC, the old APUC, had a checkered past, and the more recent RCA has been, I think, a dynamic group that's done an awful lot of good for the state. I'd like to be part of that. I think I can use my financial and business experience. I think I can bring balance, which I think so much resides here anyway, and looking at the individual dockets and weighing what is in the public interest. Some would say that's restricted to low rates, and we know that that's just low rates isn't it. We need to make sure we have investment and infrastructure and the ability of the utilities and such to maintain that infrastructure. So there's a balancing that needs to go on. I think I have a unique perspective that allows me to do that.
All right. Thank you. My little bit tongue-in-cheek comment earlier about the non-controversial, those of us who've been here and survived the telephone wars are well aware of the challenges RCA has. I would ask you personally if you're supportive of the continuing competition in telecommunication here in Alaska.
I am supportive of it. I think where we have competition, the regulatory feature, there needs to be less of a regulatory involvement. That's why there is regulatory involvement, because it's a natural monopoly, for instance. But competition brings lower cost, better service if handled right. The phone wars are over the movement from a regulated to a near non-regulated feature, and I don't know if we've if they, I suppose they've changed, but I don't think they're over yet.
Well, yes, I'm sure there will always be issues on which reasonable people can disagree. We'll just be happy if it stays reasonable. Any other questions for Mr. Price? I see none. Again, we thank you, Mr. Price, for being willing to serve, and we will pass your name on to the full legislative body when we meet in joint hearing for consideration. And again, thank you for taking your time to talk with us.
Thank you, Chairman Bundy and members of the committee.
You're certainly welcome. Okay, let's move on to HB 15, liquor licenses. This doesn't have anything to do with buying booze for young kids, does it?
No, sir. We don't do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. And I've got my staff here, too, Mike Plofsky, in case you guys ask too hard of questions here.
Just for the record, if you would.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Kevin Meyer, representative in the State House. The bill before you is House Bill 15, and there's basically two parts to this bill, but the main part is to create an alcoholic beverage license for outdoor recreation lodges. Outdoor recreation lodges have been around as long as the state and even before. They've played a very important part of our economy and have provided valuable opportunities for people who endure outdoor recreation activities. But the state has never actually provided a license for these lodges if they wanted to serve alcohol. And under our current system, if they want to serve alcohol at these lodges, they'd have to get a dispensary license, which is about $2,500 if you can get a, and if you want to serve, or if you want to allow maybe a guided group to take a six-pack with them on the boat, then you'd have to have a package license, which was another $1,500, so it'd be $4,000 if they wanted to serve both a drink with their meal and allow for booze to go on the boat. And again, a lot of these type of licenses are based on population, so even if they wanted to get it and even if they could afford to get it, they may not be able to. So it's a very burdensome and unacceptable for a lot of these small lodges. So what we're seeing happening at these lodges now is that they're encouraging their patrons, people staying at their lodges, to either bring their own or they're selling illegally, or they're providing it free, but then just charging it on the room rate. And this is causing some problems in the sense that, that's illegal to sell without a license, and even to incorporate it in the room rate is not legal. And the fact that there's not a license to help these lodges causes several problems. One is there's no control by the enforcement community. Second is that the community doesn't have any input in who is serving alcohol and who isn't. And also the wholesale people who provide the alcohol to the rural areas are concerned that they may get in trouble for selling to these lodges who don't have a license. In fact, it was a wholesaler that brought this to my attention. Brown Jug said, you know, we're very uncomfortable sending some of this booze out into these remote lodges when they don't have a license. And the other concern is that without a license, if they're selling the booze, the local communities don't have any input. With the license, then the local communities will have some input. Also, the other good thing about providing them with the license is that they get the training, the TAMS training. So now, if they're serving the booze, then they at least know when someone's intoxicated and when they shouldn't serve them anymore. The definition of a outdoor recreation lodge, and I'll just read it if I may, it means a business that provides overnight accommodation, meals, and is primarily involved in offering opportunities for persons to engage in outdoor recreation activities. Again, this would be like your fishing and hunting lodges, could be a ski lodge, anything that has to do with outdoor recreation activities. The key to this license is that when they apply for the license, they have to be approved by ABC. So now we'll know where these lodges are that are serving the alcohol. So there's more regulation, it's more oversight. Again, the public gets to have an input on who gets these licenses. Licensees are trained, again, the TAMS training. The licenses are renewed every 2 years, so if there's a problem, then we can not renew the license. Also, with having the license, they are only allowed a license if they serve to people who spend the night. So you don't have to worry about these lodges becoming a bar, because they can only serve to their guests who are spending the night, or to off-duty staff. For example, if it's a person who is giving a guided fishing trip, then he or she could also drink on the premises. And also the license could not be transferred. So they couldn't get this license and then sell it or transfer it somewhere else. The license costs would be $1,250 for every 2 years, or about $625 per year. The fiscal note obviously is going to be a positive one, because we're not getting anything at the current time. The ABC now, who would be in charge of this license and overseeing the license, is part of public safety. So not only do they have the troopers to help them, but they'd also have fish and game available to help them, you know, visit these lodges that have a license to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do with the alcohol. Finally, on part two, this was an amendment made by Representative Roper, and it has to do with the license that was in place prior to 1985 at the Double Muskie. And that particular license does not allow them to transfer the license. What we'd like to do, or with this amendment, it allows them to transfer the license to a family member as long as it stays at that premise. It only affects one person, in this case the Double Muskie restaurant. And again, it's what he wants to do with this is be able to pass it on to his, his son. Finally, the CHAR supports this. ABC board supports this. I hope they're online to speak to it. The lodges that we've talked to support it. Obviously, we haven't talked to all of them. We have not had any opposition to this. Again, we feel like it fills a void in our alcohol licensing process that has been needed. And again, it gives the state and local communities more input and control over the alcohol that's served in our communities. So with that, we're open for questions, Mr. Chairman.
On the TAM card, would everybody that works at the lodge then have to have a TAM card, or how? Who's going to be the server?
I think that would be a better question for Doug Griffin.
Okay, well, I'll hold the question then. And then another question that I'll try with you, and maybe
okay.
Go on to Doug, is what's to prevent a mom-and-pop gas station that serves snowmobilers up by Cantwell putting a cabin out back and saying, we're providing overnight recreation, and now we can serve alcohol?
Okay. That would be a good question for Doug, but my answer would be that it's got to have at least two beds, and the people that they're serving have to spend the night. And yes, if it's geared to outdoor recreation activities, they could apply for this license. But again, if it's got to go through a community public hearing process. So if it looks like it's in an area that maybe they shouldn't have a license, then the community would hopefully say that, and the ABC board does not have to give them the license. And again, it's reviewed every 2 years, so if they're misusing it, then we wouldn't have to.
The community hearing, if someone's puts in a new lodge way up the Kobuk River somewhere, and you know, it's 50, 100 miles from the nearest community, are those communities still then allowed to speak at the license hearing?
Well, the what we found in statute 4.11.460 is that, within 50 miles of the borders of a municipality, the licensee must get signatures from a majority of the residents within 1 mile of the proposed location. So if it's real remote, there is things to deal with this. Another section says 50 miles or more from the boundaries of a municipality, the licensee must get signatures from two-thirds of the permanent residents within a five-mile radius of the nearest post office.
Which might be nobody. Yeah, okay. Questions for Representative Meyer? If you'd stay with us, we'll go to teleconference and chat with Mr. Griffith. Doug, are you with us, please?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Would you care to make a statement?
Sure. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. I don't really need to go into I guess I'll just address a couple of points that you raised, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Meyer has covered highlights of the bill and need for it, and we do think it's a carefully balanced and constructed bill, given that we are cognizant of that this could put licenses out in rural parts of the state, and there are concerns about alcohol abuse in many parts of the state, and particularly in rural Alaska. So we do think it is critical that it is limited as it is to the service of guests, registered overnight guests only. We think that addresses a large amount of the problem. And as Representative Meyer said, a lot of this, there's alcohol being served out there now, and to bring it under some type of regulatory review, we think is really important. And again, his emphasis is the fact that we are now in the Department of Public Safety, and we have ability to have a little more impact out there through the troopers and the Fish and Wildlife officers now in the trooper division. Makes it a little bit easier for us to provide some level of enforcement if there is a problem. The alcohol server training, I think, is important. We may need to do something more in that area with regard to the law to make sure that this is covered by the alcohol server training. But I think that's important, too, that we have people, and this would just, anybody that's involved in the serving of the alcohol, it would not necessarily need to be all of the lodge employees, but certainly people working in the dining room, and then perhaps guides if they're out in the boat providing that service. There was some amendments made to this bill on the floor, which I think did make it narrower in terms of the product alcohol off-premise. Has to be done as part of a guided activity from the lodge. So we're trying to really be careful that this is not just a general beverage dispensary license. Again, if you look at the other side, if lodges that are operating out there now, they could apply for a broader license, which would allow them under our present statutes to serve people other than their guests. So we think this is probably a good trade-off in that we have a lodge license that's tailored specifically for the needs that also provides, we think, the protection of any population that may, and when I say near, you know, I'm talking in Alaska terms, you know, maybe 30 miles upriver, but that there would not be the ability for somebody in a dry community 30 miles away to use this as a way to get access to alcohol. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I have an additional question, if I might. The cost of the license, $12.50 biennially, is fairly substantial. How does this relate to the fee for the license? How does it relate to the actual cost of the license or of processing the license?
Mr. Chairman, that fee was, I think it was said it's one half of a beverage dispensary license, I think is the way it was derived at. You can look at it a couple different ways. In terms of the processing and oversight, I would I would hope that it doesn't cost us $1,250 of staff time to process one liquor license. But when you get into things like the oversight and the enforcement, it may very well be, which of course is troopers maybe being paid out of general fund or something. It may not be all that far off. So that's kind of a tough one to really respond to specifically. I think the amount you could argue might be too much for a very small lodge and maybe too little for a large one, but I think it's a reasonable figure. It does, because it does allow, even though it is limited to guests only, it does allow for service for on-premise consumption like in a bar or, you know, restaurant-type setting with meals, and it also allows for the sale of product off of beer and wine, spirits, whatever, in the fishing boat or out on some type of a guided activity. So it's a little more, I argue that this is a fair price because they can do both things with their guests.
And the number was arrived at by just cutting the other license in half?
Well, it's Representative Myers' bill. He came up with a number, so I think that answer is maybe better.
Okay, we'll pass the
provided by him. But just looking at the math, it happens to be half. We don't have another license that's similarly of this amount, but it is half of a beverage dispensary license.
Okay, thank you. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I think it was a combination of, we have a list here of what is charged for different licenses, and it is half of the beverage dispensary license. There is what's called a club license, which is $1,200. We thought, well, this is similar to a club license. And there's also the package store license is $1,500. So we thought $625 a year was reasonable because now they can legally sell the alcohol and they can charge whatever they want to get that profit margin to pay $600 worth of a license.
Thank you. It might be interesting when you next see you in finance to know what the actual cost of including enforcement might be. It would be interesting to know that. Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Griffin? Hearing none, I'd like to go to Bob. Is it Lean?
Bob Klein, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, sorry. It looked like a middle initial there. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Klein.
Thank you, Mr.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Klein, and I am currently operations manager for Brown Jug Liquor Stores here in Anchorage. Mr. Chairman, I actually have two other sets of credentials that would apply here. I've spent 12 years as a board member of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, nine of which I was chairman. I resigned from that or ended that last year. And finally, I am current chairman of the Government Affairs Committee for Alaska Char. So wearing a couple of hats today. It was some conversations we had with Representative Meyer that led to this legislation, and we support it. I have nothing but compliments for the representative and his staff as to how well they have answered this need. Basically, this is a good law. It brings under Title IV a practice that had been going on more out of necessity than anything else because there was no way for these lodges to operate legally, and we're all in favor of it. I'm basically today here to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Klein. Questions, Mr. Klein? Just to comment, my personal thanks for the work that Brown Jug's doing as far as underage drinking enforcement. It hasn't gone unnoticed, at least for some of us, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Is there anyone else who would like to testify here on HB 15? Representative Myers, any other comments you care to make? All right. It's the practice of the committee not to pass the bill the first time we hear it, so we will set this aside and bring it up again in the near future.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee?
That brings us to HB 90. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here on behalf of the House State Affairs Committee.
For the record, please.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I'm Max Gruenberg. I represent House District 20. And I'm here on behalf of the House State Affairs Committee, which has introduced House Bill 90. This bill was very similar to a bill which found its way, and I believe you held a hearing on last year. The bill was number 373. And this bill does one thing. It codifies the National Bank of Alaska v. Univentures 1231 case, which is 824 Pacific 2nd 1377, a 1992 Alaska Supreme Court decision, and makes Treasury warrants negotiable instruments under the UCC. Up until that time, Treasury warrants, the state had taken the position they were not negotiable instruments. So banks were free to dishonor them, and people were left, banks were actually left holding the bag. They would cash somebody's Treasury warrant, and then the state would later say, for some reason, we're not honoring this, and the bank was left without recourse. And finally, they took the case, the issue, up to the Alaska Supreme Court. And in the Univentures case, the Alaska Supreme Court said, following a number of other states that had litigated similar issues, that, of course, these are negotiable instruments. This just puts that into statute. I'm not aware of any opposition. We have people from the Department of Revenue and the Division of Banking here to, I think that's right.
Finance and Treasury.
Yes. Thank you, Treasury.
Representative Gruenberg, I'm just out of curiosity, interested in what situation would the state and why would the state refuse to honor a Treasury warrant?
Well, okay. This is a case that only a lawyer would love.
I want to know already, but go ahead.
Yeah. The Univentures case was a state lease of, let's say, an office building or something. I forget exactly what it was. It was owned by, I believe, a joint venture, but it may have been a partnership. Anyway, the people involved in the ownership of this property had a falling out. And because they litigated amongst themselves, they asked the state to put a stop payment on this, basically. In the meantime, the state had given the Treasury warrant to one of the litigants. That person negotiated the warrant. The bank paid it. And then the bank went back and said, will you please give us, send it through the channels. And by that time, they had received word not to honor it because of this litigation between the parties. That was how that arose in the Univentures case. Another situation where it could have arisen, presumably, would have been if a vendor had delivered some goods to the state or services. The state wrote a warrant and then for some reason found the goods or services to be defective. They could then have dishonored it in the technical sense. And because their Treasury warrants, the state had taken the position, they could basically stop payment, even though this may have actually been then negotiated and the vendor would have transmitted it to the bank, received cash, or gone to his bank account. There are a variety of ways, but the Univentures case was actually a falling out between, as I recall, the partners or the joint venturers.
So that we're basically telling the state that they can't stop payment now if this passes.
They can do it, but only under the UCC. The UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, says that you can stop payment, but you must notify the bank in a reasonable time so that the bank will have notice before they cash the check. In other words, you can dishonor it, but you have to give immediate notice to the banking community. And then once you've given the proper notice, you can dishonor it. But if you haven't given proper notice, then you have to honor the draft.
Other questions for Representative Grunberg? Let's hear from the state and see their view. Hi.
Well, Senator Bunny, for the record, my name is Kim Garnero. I work as the Director of Finance in the Department of Administration. As Representative Grunberg has said, this bill simply codifies in law a 1992 ruling by the Alaska Supreme Court that held that state warrants are negotiable instruments subject to the UCC rules governing holders in due course. Essentially, state warrants are treated like checks in the banking industry. Since that Supreme Court decision, the state has administered its warrants as negotiable instruments, so no administrative changes are necessary. If this legislation passes, it just codifies in statute the Supreme Court ruling.
Not a downside for the state, in your view?
Not in my view, sir. And this is Michelle Prebula. She's the state's cash manager, and both of us are answering questions that you may have.
Questions for Ms. Garnero? Seeing none, we thank you. Michelle, did you care to testify? Just here for questions. Okay. Anything else you'd like to add, Representative Grunberg?
No,
Mr. As you may have heard earlier, the practice of the committee is to not pass the bill the first time we hear it, so we will bring it up again in the near future.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We are productive today. Next Tuesday, we will hear SB 130, the administration's workers' comp bill, and begin to try to get our hands around that. HB 201, medical license application for foreign grads.
102.
Excuse me, 102. Dyslexia is a fine thing, unless you're trying to play cribbage or quote numbers in the committee.
An overdose of cold medicine. Nyquil.
Well, that might be too.
Can we play poker together?
Cribbage. Go for the cribbage.
102, 201. It all depends if I'm winning or losing. All right, and SB 124. Fisheries Business License Bond. Anything more to come before the committee? If not, my thanks to the members and staff, and we'll stand adjourned at 2:13.